Production. Recorded live.
Hello, everybody. This is Rick, and it is the 20th of May. It's hard to believe. 2013, and this is the AR Library Call. So let's get to our questions. First question. I want to know all the details of the affair. For what reason, I don't know. But I'm obsessed over them all day long. I refuse to ask my wife because the details leave images that are burned into my brain. Will this be healed over time? Is there something I can do to make them subside? Yeah, actually, over time, those intrusive thoughts do begin to go away. There are a couple of things that can help. Sometimes there are repair attempts that you can do depending on the images. If, and I'm sorry you got those images in your head. And I hope you don't get any more. Because ultimately, anytime you do comparison things, it's not even an apples to apples thing. And it does create horrible intrusive thoughts. And you'll find that it's not even true, that in the long run, whatever was happening there won't even seem real to your mate. It'll seem real to you, but to her, it won't even be important. In fact, it will be repulsive. So understand, it doesn't mean anything as much to her as it means to you, so please don't go there. But first off, if it's locations, sometimes the two of you going together, maybe after you've got a little distance and praying over the place or something like that can be helpful. One of the things I do, sometimes it's best to stay, try to work very hard at staying present in the moment and not allowing yourself to dwell on those images. Sometimes I have people actually create a worry time where they can think about that stuff as much as they want, but then like maybe set aside an hour or 2 hours a day to think about it, but every time the images come, tell themselves that they're not gonna, they've got time set aside to think about it later that day. That's helpful. Oftentimes, journaling about that stuff is very helpful. Writing it down sometimes helps get it out of your head. Asking more questions of your mate will not get it out of your head. It will only reinforce it. One of the things you want to do in the long run is you're not going to be able to think your way out of these images. The best thing to do is when it becomes almost obsessive is to try and not think about them, at least the images. And so whenever those images come, sit there and say, that was then, this is now, come back to the present, and do an activity such as memorization or something else that keeps you present now. Also, one last thing that sometimes is helpful is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, EMDR, and I would suggest that maybe you try that. You may find some relief in getting that sort of therapy. Let's see. One more thing that I do with those images sometimes with people, if faith is something that's important, is I will pray with someone, and you might, if you have a good friend, and ask the Lord to show me where he was in that moment. And sometimes, believe it or not, just learning to see it differently by asking God to show you where he was in that moment is enough to actually change it. And you begin to see it very differently once you can see God in that circumstance. So hopefully that will give you some suggestions. Next question. My husband and I started our EMS group last week, and in week one, our assignment was to tell each other our stories. He started first, and he got into the story. There were small details that were new to me. I totally couldn't handle hearing the story and started asking questions and continually interrupted him. He's trying to do anything to help us heal, and I know that, but the pain of hearing recount his actions and interactions with her is unbearable. Could I just not be ready for this? How do I just sit and listen? I want to be successful in the class and want him to feel safe in being honest, but it's so painful, and I get physically ill when he tells the story. Any suggestions would be greatly appreciated. Well, and hopefully he's not telling the story in too much detail, but it is incredibly painful, and what you're going to find as you go through the class is that you'll come to the place where you can look at it and actually probably not flood as much, but that only happens typically by talking some about it. And you're at the stage where you're still trying to get your mind around it, which is extremely difficult. And I'm so sorry that you're going through that. You'll find over time, though, and especially as you go through the class, that some of this will begin making more sense. Because as soon as you finally come to the place where you kind of see it and you're comfortable, not like it, but you think you've got your mind around it, you'll move on to the next stage where you no longer think about it. What a lot of us do is we want to try to avoid thinking about it, to avoid the pain, but in the long run, it keeps coming back. So I would encourage you to keep going forward and see if things aren't better in the next few weeks, especially after about week 5. And I'd love it if you would write me again and just kind of let me know if things are getting better for you and if you have any further questions. Let's see, next question. It has been 5 months since discovery of my husband's sexual addiction. In the last few weeks, I find that when I am out and about or even in church and I look at men, I start thinking, I wonder if I could get him to have sex with me. It's like the thoughts come out of nowhere and I have no desire to have an affair. This has been happening almost every day for a couple of weeks. I don't know what to do about it. Why am I having these thoughts? What's wrong with me? How do I make them stop? Well, I am so sorry. That must be horrible. So typically, and maybe this is the way I kind of look at this, it is normal for us. Well, there are two reasons I think that people have those type of thoughts. One is because the wound is so deep, it makes us feel undesirable or unwanted. And so just the thought that somebody would be interested in me and would want to have an affair with me is validation that I am okay as a person. And so there is a lot of times people are tempted simply because they've lost so much confidence and they're so insecure as a result of what's happened. And I find that to be especially true when you're dealing with sexual addiction. The second one is it's natural for us. I mean, if you believe you're created in the image of God, one of God's characteristics is justice. And there's a part of us that desperately wants justice. We want somebody else to hurt as badly as they've hurt us. At the same time, we also know that mercy is even a more important characteristic. But there can't be mercy or love if there's really not a strong sense of justice. I mean, what is there to forgive if, you know, nothing was ever, if you weren't ever offended? However, so if it's a sense, so the other thing would be vengeance or a part of you that wants to get even. And I'm not sure from the question what it is. It leads me to think, since you don't talk about whether or not you're really upset with your husband, that maybe it's about the insecurity in a part of you that wants that validation. And I don't know that anything's wrong with you, but at the same time, you don't want to do one of two things. Sometimes women who are married to sex addicts, they have what I call a cornea transplant, so they start looking at other women wondering if that's somebody your husband would be attracted to. And, you know, it's almost like they can't even look at women. You've kind of got the opposite problem. You're looking at men and wondering if you could be found attractive enough for them to have sex with you. And so I would suggest, because you're not somebody that wants to use someone. And yes, I mean, the answer is yes. I'm sure there are always people who would want to have sex with you. That's not the problem. But what I pray whenever I have that thought, at least, is I pray, you know, God, I would rather suffer for their benefit than use them or gratify myself at their expense. I don't want to gratify anybody at their expense. I don't want to use anybody. And so you want to shift back to a place where you're just caring about those people and not wanting to use them. So just keep telling yourself, I'd rather, you know, suffer for their benefit than gratify myself at their expense. And I think you'll find by just beginning to pray that every time that happens, that thought will begin to go away. Begin to look at them and say, I don't want to use people. God bless them, Lord. Just God bless them. And see if that doesn't help. If that doesn't work, do me a favor and write me back, and we'll see what we can do about that. Next question. In your weekly newsletter, you state, and what if someone betrays their own beliefs and moves into self-deception? Can they ever change? Yes, but not without moving out of their self-deception. A willingness to take responsibility and efforts to make restitution and the pursuit of reform. This week, my wife's girlfriend, and if you ask me, an emotional affair partner, left her husband of 2 months because he was drinking heavily and temporarily moved in with us with my wife's permission. I was not consulted. And though I would have probably allowed it anyway, just to keep from making a scene, I let my wife know I was hurt that she allowed this without asking me if it was okay. A month before our D-Day, revealing her 2-year-long affair, my wife moved in with her and lived with her for 11 months. So this was a huge trigger and reopened the wound of her abandoning me. The girlfriend went back home Friday, but the hurt remains. On Saturday, my wife shrugged off my touching her, comparing me to a fly buzzing around her. She's not shown any love or affection for the past half year, despite my efforts to reconnect and save our marriage. I've told her that her love and affection are necessary for me to completely heal from the abandonment and affair, but this has not caused her to change her behavior toward me. Does this sound like a safe situation? I'm ready to give up and go separate ways despite 34 years of marriage and a lifetime of experiences because I don't want to live the rest of my life like this. We have tried Mort Fertel's marriage fitness as well as the EMSO, and she quit on me both times. You know, it doesn't sound like a safe situation. I guess part of me would ask, what does she want? But at some point, I think you can see actions or see kind of where a person's heart is by their actions. If she doesn't want to do Mort Fertel's marriage fitness or EMSO online, does she have any suggestions? But I would see, I would certainly not be the one trying to be the motivation. I would quit pushing and see what her motivations are. And if she does nothing eventually, you know, maybe you let go. I don't know why, from what you're describing, she would still be there. It's a great question, but, you know, it only takes one person to change a marriage, but that one person, even if they change, while it changes the marriage dance, it's not a guarantee that a marriage will move in a positive direction. It takes two people both doing what's necessary to heal. The only thing you can do about yourself is you can certainly examine yourself and set, you know, see if there's anything you're doing to contribute to the problem. Take responsibility for that. You can also, you don't make your wife feel a certain way or behave a certain way. In the same way, she also doesn't make you feel a certain way or behave a certain way. You certainly can set boundaries to keep you safe. You can tell her that, you know, if you're not willing to work on the relationship, I don't feel safe enough in this and I want to be in a separate room from you. I mean, you set boundaries for yourself, not for your mate. I might suggest that you read Cloud and Townsend's book on boundaries in marriage. It may also give you some good ideas of things you might be able to try in the future. So hopefully that'll give you some direction. Let's see. You have mentioned that relapse is part of recovery, but how many relapses are part of recovery, and what is the appropriate godly response to relapse? It's interesting. Luke 17, Jesus addresses that. He says, if your brother sins, rebuke him. If he does it seven times in a day and seven times, so you rebuke him. If he repents, forgive him. If he does it seven times in a day and seven times repents, forgive him. The problem, I think, a lot of times with relapse has to do with hardness of heart. And if somebody's heart is hard, they're really not repentant. I mean, there's not a place that's concerned about what they're doing. They're not grieved. But if they keep trying and they keep coming back to center, and it's not even about getting it right. Maybe it's just continuing to try to get it right and recognize it and owning it and taking responsibility. I mean, even in recovery sometimes for people going into AA, it takes a long time. Now, if someone's not going to – if they're continuing to struggle with recovery – how close you get to them, whether or not you can live with them, certainly that's a difficult call. But when you ask the question, what's the appropriate godly response to relapse, you know, again, I'm going to tell you what Jesus said. It really had to do with the other person and how they responded, and whether or not their heart was soft and broken as a result of it. But if that were the case, then you know, it was more, the godly response was to try to forgive. Now, if it doesn't feel safe, and to me that passage talks about safety, then I think you get back into separation and how do you stay safe. And separation then, you know, I don't know that we have to reconcile with someone who's not safe. That's just my thoughts on it. And here's our last question for the day. Hi, Rick. Two questions. I have been in recovery for 3 years from my spouse's infidelity. We've made so much progress that I tend to forget this is a 5-year total process. My question is, affairs destroy trust. Can this also apply to building trust with new same-sex friendships also? Or does it impact the trusting of your partner? And second, I have a history of obsessive compulsive behaviors and affairs. I recently felt the need to pull back in a platonic friendship because it started to feel and mimic my past affair patterns. When we are healing from our own wounds, is it normal to get involved in similar bad behaviors that aren't exactly the same as damaging in the past? I feel foolish for not seeing this coming. I had been slacking in my usual recovery checks and balances. Interesting also is her response to me setting boundaries and expressing my feelings that the relationship felt unhealthy and was catastrophic, just like your breakup with an AP. It was shocking. Okay. My question is, affairs destroy trust. Can this also apply to building trust with new same-sex friendships also, or does it just impact the trusting of your partner? Yes, it certainly can affect friendships also. A lot of times people will feel very betrayed. And in fact, sometimes a friendship may even feel, sometimes friends can feel even more betrayed. And I don't know if they can be more betrayed, but certainly as betrayed. And the problem is with a friendship, obviously there's kind of a crucible that a husband and wife live in that contain, that kind of keep you together because of vows and commitments. Friendships, as strong as they may be, oftentimes don't have that crucible and so are more likely to fail as a result of what the other person perceives as a betrayal. So, yeah, rebuilding trust in friendships is also difficult and takes work on your part in the same way as it takes work to rebuild trust with your mate. Let me look at this second question again. I have a history of obsessive-compulsive behaviors myself and affairs. I recently felt the need to pull back in a platonic friendship because it started to feel and mimic my past affair patterns. When we are healing from our own wounds, is it normal to get involved in similar bad behaviors that aren't exactly the same or as damaging in the past? I feel foolish for not seeing this coming. Absolutely, and it's called cross-addiction. So it's not as much the person, and we can tell people this all day long. It's really about the validation or the reinforcement that comes from a relationship, and especially if an affair is based a lot on text and frequent contacts and things like that, you can almost replace what was happening in the affair with that friendship. I've been slacking my usual recovery checks and balances. Interesting also is her response to me setting boundaries and expressing my feelings that the relationship felt unhealthy, was catastrophic, just like when you break up with an AP. It was shocking. And yeah, so if that relationship, I mean, usually if you sense something like that, you're sensing that because something is coming back the other direction. And I wouldn't, you know, it wasn't just your feelings. It probably was also feelings that she had. And obviously you just found out about that. I hope you're okay. I'm sorry you went through all of that. And I'm glad that you're doing as well as you are in recovery. Congratulations on that. And I just want to wish you well and just keep moving forward. So that's all of our questions for the day. I want to thank everybody for joining the call, and I hope you have a good week, and I'll be talking to you next Monday to healing.